Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence, the Cybersecurity Edition for Tuesday, June 16th, 2026.
Our central thesis today is that the rapid deployment of autonomous agents has fundamentally broken the traditional perimeter of digital defense. We are moving from a landscape of static vulnerabilities to one of self-evolving agentic threats that operate faster than human oversight can intervene.
It is no longer about patching holes but chasing ghosts.
We can trace that further. The transition from simple coding assistance to fully agentic autonomous threats represents the first major shift in this new era of automated conflict.
1 billion. That's the number of URLs managed by the Outsider Enterprise Network, an AI-powered phishing operation that helped facilitate $2 billion in losses. We're talking about the AI arms race, Alex, specifically how the same models helping developers write cleaner code are now being used to build automated, highly efficient digital weapons.
It's a massive expansion of the attack surface. We're moving from simple scripts to what researchers are calling agentic scaffolding, where the real danger isn't just a single piece of malware, but a custom architecture of AI agents chained together to autonomously navigate a target's network.
It sounds like we're moving from a world of burglars who pick locks to a world of self-replicating, sentient swarm bots that can reconfigure the house's floor plan while they're inside.
That's actually not an exaggeration. According to Security Now, we're seeing the rise of agentic AI worms. These aren't fixed-path viruses. They use recursive reasoning to scan local environments and adapt their exploitation techniques in real time. They can even use a parasitic resource model, hijacking the GPUs of infected machines to power their own intelligence, effectively using your own hardware to upgrade the attacker's brain.
So the more powerful the victim's computer, the smarter the worm becomes. It's like a flu that gets more intelligent the more it infects your lungs.
The pattern is clear. The speed is unprecedented. Risky Biz reported that Anthropic's new cybersecurity specialized model, Claude Mythos 5, has demonstrated the ability to generate functional exploits for Firefox and Windows bugs in under an hour. We're seeing the patch to exploit window shrink from days or weeks to literally 60 minutes.
And yet, while the attackers are getting these high-speed, specialized tools, the U.S. administration has been busy restricting access to Anthropic's Mythos and Fable models.
That creates a massive strategic asymmetry. Cybersecurity headlines noted that these restrictions essentially deprive security teams of the very AI tools they need to counter the increasingly sophisticated AI-driven attacks. We're effectively disarming the defenders, while the attackers use open-weight models running locally on unconstrained hardware to bypass all provider-side guardrails.
It's like trying to fight a wildfire with a garden hose, while the fire has been given access to every flammable material in the neighborhood.
It's even deeper than just the tools. The very way we write software is changing. Application Security Weekly argued that we are entering an era of agentship risk. The primary AppSec challenge is no longer just human error, but a total lack of governance and traceability for code produced by autonomous agents. When you have a workforce where 100% of employees from HR to marketing can now deploy code or automation via LLMs, you lose the ability to audit what is actually running in your environment.
So we're just accumulating AI slop, vast quantities of unvetted, non-deterministic code, and hoping for the best.
That's the fear. There's a prediction that by 2029, we'll be facing a gigantic mess because the volume of AI-generated slop is expected to outpace the rate at which LLM-driven security improvements can mitigate the resulting bugs. We're seeing a structural break where the sheer volume of new vulnerabilities exceeds human patching capabilities.
And it's not just the code itself, it's how we interact with it. I was reading about how developers are using these agents to handle bug reports. It sounds convenient until you realize the bug report itself can be a weapon.
That's a massive unaddressed attack surface. Tenet Threat Labs recently demonstrated that AI coding agents like Sentry's agent are susceptible to prompt injection when they process automatically generated bug reports. An attacker can craft a creative bug report that contains hidden instructions, tricking the AI agent into executing arbitrary code changes or unauthorized system access. It's the fundamental risk of mixing untrusted user data with the authoritative instructions that govern the agent.
It's a perfect loop of failure. The AI tries to fix a bug, but the fix is actually the payload.
And it's even getting more visual. We're seeing visual cloning, where attackers simply feed a screenshot of a high-fidelity website into an AI model to replicate a perfect, pixel-perfect phishing page. It lowers the barrier to entry for even the most basic scammers.
So if the code is unvetted, the agents are unmonitored, and the phishing is indistinguishable from the real thing, where does the perimeter even exist anymore?
The perimeter is migrating. Cybersecurity Wire suggests that in an agentic enterprise, we have to move from a point-of-login verification model to a continuous point-of-decision model. We have to monitor the real-time actions of autonomous agents, not just who logged in, but what the agent is deciding to do with the data it has access to.
Which sounds like an impossible amount of oversight.
It is.
There's a real danger of a token bonfire where AI companies essentially sell the problem, increased vulnerabilities and complexity, and then sell the solution AI-driven patching simultaneously.
It's the ultimate corporate hustle. Our AI broke your security, but don't worry, buy our new AI to fix it.
But there is a silver lining, or at least a way forward. The industry is moving toward agentic remediation. We're looking at using AI to automate testing and mitigation at the same speed as the discovery. There's even talk of a threat-informed risk reduction model, where we use a threat meter to decide when to allow automated YOLO deployments of patches for high-risk, immediate threats, while keeping a tighter leash on low-risk issues.
It's a high-stakes game of automated poker.
The implication runs deeper. The window for this intelligence advantage might be narrow. Some researchers believe we are in a temporary 2-year period of extreme instability. While attackers currently have the advantage in discovering 0 days, the sheer deluge of information will eventually force a massive, rapid increase in global patching capabilities.
Security architects need to stop looking for ways to block the agents and start building ways to govern their decisions.
The real signal will be when we see the first widespread use of adversarial rewriting, where malware starts successfully deleting do not attack lists or security instruction sets within a network.
But if we can't even keep up with the bugs being created today, how are we ever going to handle the massive wave of new vulnerabilities that are about to hit the ecosystem? I think we need to stop calling it vulnerability management and just start calling it digital triage in a burning building. We've reached a point where the sheer volume of bugs is so high that fixing everything is a delusional fantasy.
That sounds a bit dramatic, Maya, but if you look at the data from this month's Patch Tuesday, the burning building metaphor actually holds up. Microsoft just released its largest patch cycle on record, with over 200 CVEs, that's 208 according to the Zero Day Initiative, and that volume alone has already eclipsed Microsoft's entire annual output from 2018.
Okay, so it's not just a bigger fire, it's a bigger fire being fueled by a flamethrower.
It's a telling detail. We're seeing a fundamental shift in the scale of software maintenance because AI-driven discovery tools, like Microsoft's MDASH system, or even the integration of OpenAI's Codex into security workflows, are finding flaws at an unprecedented rate. We're seeing a 28% year-over-year increase in total CVEs and a staggering 62% rise in critical vulnerabilities.
So we're basically in a permanent state of emergency mode. Does this mean we just accept that the software is broken by design?
Not necessarily broken, but definitely accelerating. The real issue isn't just the volume, it's the velocity. As the CISO series podcast argued, we're seeing a triple threat where AI accelerates social engineering, inflates the volume of vulnerabilities, and enables much faster exploitation of internet-facing services. We're seeing the breakout time for attackers, the time it takes to move laterally through a network, drop to an average of 29 minutes, with some recorded instances as low as 27 seconds.
27 seconds? That's not even a window for a human to blink, let alone a security team to find a login. That's just automated physics.
It is.
And that speed is exactly what's forcing the hand of regulators. CISA is moving away from the old, outmoded strategy of trying to patch everything toward a high-precision, risk-based triage system. According to the record from Recorded Future News, CISA is pivoting toward a model that evaluates vulnerabilities based on three specific vectors: internet exposure, alignment with known exploits, and the potential for exploit automation.
Instead of a blanket fix-everything mandate, they're playing a game of pick the most obvious targets.
Their new binding operational directive, the one being finalized this week, is incredibly aggressive. For federal agencies, if a vulnerability is public-facing, exists in the known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, and is easily automatable, they have a window of just 3 days to remediate it.
3 days? I can barely get my IT department to approve a software update for a printer in 3 weeks. You're telling me they have to secure the entire federal perimeter in 72 hours?
Sounds impossible, but the math is actually on their side in one specific way. CISA's own data shows that as little as 1% of vulnerabilities actually meet those high-intensity, 3-day criteria. The goal is to move from reactive, velocity-based patching to a model of patching smarter.
Patching smarter sounds like a lovely euphemism for we've given up on the rest.
It's more about changing the engineering workflow. The goal is to shift security both left into threat modeling and right into automated patch validation. We're seeing a move toward action-based engineering, where security teams don't just dump raw data on developers, but instead deliver automated pull requests and actionable tickets directly into tools like JIRA and GitHub. Sanjita Arora from Adobe highlighted this, suggesting that we need to use AI for defensive automation to manage the surge, focusing on metrics like time to attribution rather than just number of patches applied.
But there's a massive technical debt problem here. You can't just automate a patch into a 20-year-old legacy system without the whole thing collapsing.
That is the primary operational risk. Enterprise Security Weekly noted that rapid patching mandates like CISA's 72-hour window risk turning IT departments into the primary source of instability, as the speed of deployment can break critical legacy integrations or encryption protocols. The real bottleneck isn't the discovery of the bug, it's the lack of fundamental software engineering maturity, specifically the lack of robust regression testing and end-to-end QA needed to deploy updates without breaking production.
So we're caught in a pincer movement. On one side, AI-driven attackers are finding and exploiting bugs in seconds. On the other, our own internal processes are too brittle to move any faster than a snail.
And there's a third pressure point, the patching arms race. On July 14th, we're expecting a massive, highly coordinated release from the researcher Nightmare Eclipse, described by some as a bone-shattering drop that will likely collide with the next scheduled patch Tuesday. It's a deliberate attempt to overwhelm the standard defensive response windows.
It's like trying to repair a jet engine while you're mid-flight, but the engine is also being actively dismantled by a swarm of robot bees.
That's a bit visceral, but accurate. To survive, some are arguing for a complete architectural shift. The CISO series podcast suggested that resilient infrastructure must be designed with an ephemeral mindset, creating systems that are continuously rebuilt from scratch to simply outpace the lifecycle of an exploit. We have to move away from the Cambridge approach of seeking perfection before deployment and toward a Redmond approach, rapid iterative releases that prioritize availability and speed of remediation.
Even if the engineers do their part, we still have the unseen threats. I was reading about that Splunk/Postgres vulnerability, where an unauthenticated API endpoint essentially acted as a proxy for a much deeper flaw. It doesn't matter how fast you patch if you don't even realize the door was unlocked.
That's the core of the new mandate. CISA's new directive is turning vulnerability management into a forensic requirement. Agencies can't just apply a patch, they now have to determine if a system was compromised before the patch was applied. If you just patch a hole without checking if someone already crawled through it, you're just sealing the evidence.
Federal IT directors need to stop viewing the CISA 72-hour window as a mere deadline and start auditing their regression testing pipelines immediately.
Keep a close eye on the July 14th Patch Tuesday window to see if the sheer volume of the Nightmare Eclipse release actually breaks the automated deployment workflows we're seeing in the federal space.
But as these automated attacks get faster, I wonder if the real battlefield is shifting away from software code and toward the physical infrastructure that keeps the lights on. We're living in an era where the most devastating border crossings don't involve infantry or tanks, but rather a single, well-placed packet of data. Today, we're looking at the collision of geopolitical ambition and digital vulnerability, specifically, the rise of state-sponsored espionage and the systematic sabotage of the physical infrastructure we take for granted. Alex, if you had to bet, are we moving toward a world of impenetrable digital fortresses, or are we just building taller walls around much more porous gates?
The architecture suggests the gates are getting much wider, Maya. We're seeing a fundamental shift where attackers aren't just trying to break into a network, they are targeting the very infrastructure layer that makes the attack possible. As the record from Recorded Future News highlighted regarding the prosecution of Denny Zabresco, the U.S. Justice Department is now going after the providers of virtual private servers and domains used by groups like Void Blizzard. It's a move from chasing the individual hacker to disrupting the digital supply chain of anonymity.
So instead of catching the thief, we're trying to arrest the guy who rents them the getaway car and the untraceable burner phone. It sounds efficient on paper, but does it actually stop the momentum?
It creates friction, but the momentum is multi-vector. Take the Syrup clone campaign we've seen surfacing since 2025. They aren't just using malware, they are using social engineering as a service. They use the Safelove Stealer Android spyware to target Russian military personnel via fake romantic interests or humanitarian lures. This isn't just a technical breach, it's a psychological one. They use a platform called Contour to organize intercepted Telegram sessions by military rank and unit. It's highly structured intelligence gathering designed to bypass the technical perimeter entirely by targeting the human's emotions.
I love that we've reached a point in human evolution where honey traps are officially a standardized module in a state-sponsored malware toolkit. It's like the 1940s spy novels, but with much worse user interfaces.
It's actually much more scalable now. We're seeing the same pattern in Poland with the Belaruslink group Ghostwriter. Since March, they've pivoted from targeting professional work accounts to targeting the personal Gmail accounts of government officials and even their families. By exploiting the universal vulnerabilities of consumer-grade authentication, like fake notifications from online learning platforms, they can map out the social and professional hierarchies of the Polish state. They aren't just stealing documents, they are hijacking contact lists to inject disinformation that poisons diplomatic relations with the US and NATO.
So the family dinner becomes the new reconnaissance ground. It's a nightmare for anyone trying to maintain a work-life balance when your spouse's login credentials are a national security risk. But let's move from the psychological to the physical. We're hearing about more than just stolen passwords. We're hearing about broken cables and paralyzed sugar mills.
the physical layer is increasingly a target for both sabotage and accidental disruption. In the Baltic Sea, the Finnish Prosecution Service is bringing charges against the crew of the Fitberg, a vessel carrying sanctioned Russian steel, after it allegedly dragged its anchor for 130 kilometers, damaging two subsea telecommunications cables. While some officials suggest this might be operational negligence by incompetent shipmasters, it highlights a massive strategic risk. The very vessels used for sanctioned trade are creating high-risk profiles for the undersea corridors that hold the global internet together.
And then there's the oops, I broke the economy approach to cyber warfare.
We saw it in Australia, where a cyber attack on Mackay Sugar's Farley and Racecourse mills forced a complete halt to harvesting at the start of the season. This isn't just a local problem. It creates an immediate upstream paralysis that threatens the supply of raw sugar to major economies like South Korea, Japan, and Indonesia. It's a way to trigger economic instability without ever firing a shot. We saw a similar single point of failure collapse in Russia this month, where an attack on the software firm Kaluga Astral disrupted everything from tax reporting to public transport in Moscow for an entire week. One software provider goes down, and suddenly the entire state apparatus loses its ability to authenticate digital certificates or manage documents.
It's the domino effect as a business model. But even the countries trying to build a cyber shield are struggling. Estonia, for instance, is essentially trying to implement a digital border.
They are. Effective August 31, Estonia is implementing a new policy to quarantine all emails from the Russian RU top-level domain before they reach government officials. It's a move from reactive security to structural isolation, effectively treating a specific domain as an inherently high-risk indicator. It's a digital extension of physical sovereignty, forcing organizations to decouple from Russian-controlled email providers to prevent database breaches.
It's a bold move, but is it enough? I mean, look at the UK. They're debating whether to weaken their own telecom defenses against Chinese hackers, specifically the Salt Typhoon campaign, because the industry is pushing back on the costs of compliance.
And that's the critical tension. As the record from Recorded Future News noted, the UK's decision to roll back these protections reveals a fundamental failure in how we calculate risk. When the government weighs the economic cost of industry compliance against the potential for a massive state-backed intrusion, they are effectively excluding the catastrophic national security costs from the equation. We see this same struggle in the US, where the expiration of Section 702 creates a systemic vulnerability. If telecommunications providers withdraw because they lack legal indemnification, the entire intelligence architecture could collapse.
It feels like we're caught in a loop of trying to patch a sinking ship with much more expensive, but much more fragile patches.
It's even getting more insidious. Cybersecurity Headlines recently reported on a sophisticated operation from China and Malaysia targeting US workers. They aren't even hacking computers anymore, they are using recruitment as a service. They use legitimate-looking consulting fronts and job advertisements to identify individuals with security clearances. They are leveraging the professional mobility of the workforce to bypass the perimeter. They don't need to break into your network if they can simply hire someone who already has the keys.
The new way to steal secrets isn't a Trojan horse, it's just a very convincing LinkedIn and mail.
There's a signal here, it's a move from the digital breach to the identity perimeter. Whether it's through stealing credentials to move laterally through healthcare networks, as seen in the California Water Service breach, or through the use of disclosure fraud to weaponize transparency portals, the boundary of the network is no longer a firewall, it's the person behind the screen.
Regulators in London need to stop prioritizing industry growth over the visibility of signaling intrusion detection systems.
Watch for any new maritime surveillance expansions in the Baltic Sea, as a spike in accidental cable damage would confirm that sanctioned trade routes have become a primary vector for undersea sabotage.
But this raises a harder question. How do we secure the very factories that build the software we rely on? Alex, if the entire global digital economy is built on a foundation of open source code, why does it feel like we're building a skyscraper on quicksand?
Because the software factory, the very pipelines we use to build and distribute code, is becoming the primary target. We're seeing a fundamental shift where attackers aren't trying to break into production systems anymore. They're targeting the underlying building blocks like package managers and repositories.
Instead of picking the lock on the front door, they're just poisoning the water supply before it even reaches the house.
Cybersecurity Headlines notes that supply chain vulnerabilities are moving toward infrastructure-mediated attacks. Take the recent hijacking of 1,900 Arch Linux packages via the AUR. Attackers exploited the adoption mechanism for orphan packages to gain maintainer status, which then allowed them to inject malicious scripts directly into the downstream ecosystem.
And I assume adoption is just a polite way of saying hostile takeover.
In this context, yes. And it's getting harder to detect. CyberWire Daily reports that the Miasma malware is now using legitimate Microsoft publishing credentials and OpenID Connect tokens. This gives malicious packages valid cryptographic provenance, meaning traditional security checks see them as trusted even though they're designed to target OAuth and Kubernetes environments.
Great, so even when the paperwork looks perfect, the payload is still there. Is there any actual defense, or are we just waiting for the next massive breach?
There is a move toward explicit authorization. GitHub is planning to disable npm install scripts by default. This targets the lifecycle hook mechanism, which they've identified as the single largest code execution surface in the npm ecosystem. It's a shift from a model of implicit trust to one of explicit permission.
Which sounds lovely in theory, but I bet it's going to break 1,000 automated workflows.
It will. With the npm 12 release expected this July, developers will have to manually activate things like AllowGit and AlarmMode. If you don't update your configuration, your entire CI/CD pipeline could grind to a halt.
DevOps engineers are going to have a very long July. Security teams must audit every automated dependency hook before the July npm update hits. Watch for any surge in broken deployment pipelines as the industry struggles to move away from implicit trust. But as we secure the code on the ground, how do we protect the hardware orbiting far above us? You know what I noticed this week? Every time I look at my phone, I'm reminded that we are essentially tethered to a massive, invisible web of orbital hardware that is becoming increasingly difficult to defend.
It's because the perimeter is physically moving. We're seeing a fundamental shift from ground-based protection toward on-orbit detection, as the rise of LEO megaconstellations like Starlink and Amazon's Kuiper changes the entire security calculus.
It's enough to make you lose sleep. You've got compromised navigation, hijacked communications, and suddenly your smart fridge is part of a coordinated orbital hijack.
Well, the scale is the issue. CyberWire Daily noted that the proliferation of LEO constellations is driving a move toward commodity hardware and even Linux-based systems to achieve scale, which paradoxically expands the attack surface by stripping away the security through obscurity found in older, exquisite geostationary assets.
So we're trading bespoke, hardened fortresses for a massive, interconnected web of cheap, hackable parts.
Stepping back because there is no centralized CVE database for custom space hardware, defenders can't look for specific software vulnerabilities. CyberWire Daily reported that security is transitioning from deterministic indicators of compromise to probabilistic indicators of behavior, like spotting unexpected maneuvers or telemetry changes.
Wait, so instead of looking for a digital fingerprint, we're just watching to see if the satellite starts acting weird?
The data tells a story. There is a massive risk in relying on that telemetry. CyberWire Daily warned that much like the Stuxnet attack, sophisticated hackers can manipulate sensors to report normal status while they are actively sabotaging the hardware.
That is a terrifying feedback loop.
Which is why we're seeing a push for software-defined updates. Journalist Sean Waterman highlights that since launching new hardware is too expensive for constant patching, the industry is looking at open-source management from players like Kratos or even Deloitte's Silent Shield to prove intrusion detection can be deployed via software updates to existing assets.
Satellite operators need to finalize their behavioral detection protocols before the next wave of LEO deployments. Watch for the first reported unexplained maneuver in a high-value constellation. It will be the moment the industry realizes the software patch didn't work. As we wrap up this edition, the thread connecting everything we've discussed today, from the terrifying efficiency of Claude Mythos 5 to the massive CVE surge in Microsoft's latest cycle, is the collapse of the temporal buffer. We are no longer operating in a world where a patch gap of a few days provides a window for human intervention. The transition from static vulnerabilities to autonomous, self-evolving exploits means the breakout time isn't just shrinking, it is effectively vanishing.
That brings us to the most critical shift in the landscape. For CISOs and infrastructure operators, the fundamental calculus is moving away from perimeter integrity and toward high-precision, automated triage. The implication is clear. Organizations can no longer rely on the detect and respond cycle because the attack's lifecycle is now faster than a human-led SOC can even acknowledge an alert. Your primary operational priority must shift from managing vulnerabilities to managing the automated workflows that authorize or deny machine-speed changes to your environment. If you cannot automate your defensive response to match the 29-minute breakout window, you aren't just behind the curve, you are essentially invisible to the threat.
It's a massive structural tension, especially as we look toward July. We're caught between the need for rapid, automated remediation and the very real risk of breaking the very systems we're trying to protect.
Worth noting, if you want to see if this systemic instability is reaching a breaking point, keep your eyes locked on the July 14th release of Nightmare Eclipse. If that release triggers a surge in unverified or broken automated deployment workflows, it will confirm that our defensive scaling has officially lost the race against agentic exploitation.
That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next Tuesday.